Well, NASA is on a mission to return humans to the surface of the moon for the first time in more than 50 years. But to do that, they need to take on a mission a little closer to home. The space agency has unveiled the third stage of the Artemis project, which will see astronauts fly to low Earth orbit and dock with prototype lunar landers in a rehearsal for the moon mission ahead. NASA Administrator Jared Isaacman says it will bring the future of space travel closer.
Think about how many spacecraft, all of which will eventually carry human beings, will be in orbit at the same time. From Dragon, Shenzhou, Soyuz, possibly Starliner, Starship, and Blue Origin landers. This seems like the beginning of the future that we imagined as children. This seems like the very beginning of Earth's first Starfleet to me.
Well, Pam Melroy is a former NASA astronaut and former Deputy Administrator of NASA, and she joined me a short time ago. Pam Melroy, it's great to have you on Breakfast. Welcome to the program.
Thanks so much. I'm happy to be here to talk about something exciting.
So Pam, tell me about these astronauts. They'll be orbiting the Earth instead of heading to the moon. What's the thinking with that? What are they hoping to achieve relatively close to home?
Well, one of the most critical phases of flight for a lunar mission is joining up with your lander and then separating, going down to the surface of the moon and then back up. And that's exactly the way it was done in Apollo. It allows you to optimize the lander just for that portion of the flight instead of having something that will do everything. But you have to connect with it. And we have a lot of experience with rendezvous and proximity operations and docking from the space station. But every single time we've had a new vehicle, something has been challenging. I personally experienced several problems and malfunctions during my three rendezvous with the space station. So it's really critical to get all that stuff behind you. And that's the idea, is to dock to the two potential landers.
How difficult will these maneuvers be for the astronauts and also for a ground control as well?
Like I said, it's always a very intense phase of flight. I can tell you that autonomous dockings have a very poor track record. They generally crash into each other at some point. That's even happened before on the Russian space station. They had a collision because of a rendezvous that didn't go well. So it's a very dynamic phase of flight. It's not intuitive like flying an airplane in formation. You have to really understand the effect of your thrusters on the orbital mechanics. It will be very exciting.
This mission, Pam, is part of a public-private partnership between NASA, Jeff Bezos's Blue Origin, and Elon Musk's SpaceX. Why is NASA looking to the private sector to take part in these missions now?
Well, the idea is that if you have a partner who has an interest in developing the capability for potentially for other customers and other capabilities, they're going to put some skin in the game in the development. So that partnership can end up costing the government significantly less for development. And especially if you have competition, it keeps more than one capability. We've learned the hard way that when the space shuttle went down for a mishap investigation, for example, it was years before we were able to return to flight. If you have more than one vehicle, especially if it's flying for other customers as well, you have a much better chance of maintaining regular access.
What's it like being involved in an organization like NASA when the White House appetite for space exploration can go up and down? It's not a constant thing, that political will.
Yeah, that's absolutely one of the most challenging aspects of space policy, is that sort of up and down. But I would actually characterize it, I think one thing that NASA has, it's really important. It's been going long enough that literally every administration has had something good happen, perhaps at a moment that was really important, like there were a lot of other things that were not going so well. And the ability to point to that and say, look, we've done this great thing that's exciting everyone, and it's, you know, good for the president, good for the administration. And so there's really bipartisan support, both in Congress and all generally from politicians, for NASA. The real problem is that when you have a change of administration, people come in and decide that I've got a better idea. Let's change everything around. And these are architectures that take, you know, a decade or more to really fully flesh out. So if you're changing all the time, then you can have difficulties.
Pam, Australia has had a long relationship with NASA and will be playing a role in these Artemis missions leading up to the moon landing. What opportunities do you see for Australia's space industry?
Oh, I think it's an amazing opportunity. Yes, of course, I think most people know about the communications network, the Deep Space Network outside Canberra. Australia is quite famous for also, you know, back all the way in Apollo at Parkes, transmitting the, you know, first video from the moon. That hasn't changed. The geographic area, the quality of the facility is still there. And so Canberra and the Deep Space Network will play a very important role. And I think that's a real capability for communications technology for Australia. But in addition to that, the Rover is a small rover that is going to be picking up, hopefully picking up some regolith, some lunar dirt. And why that's important is lunar dirt is very tough to characterize. We know roughly it ranges in size from very small to sort of pebbles and then rocks. But it matters, you know, if you've got rovers driving on it, if you are kicking up this dirt and dust in the air above the surface when you land. So there's an almost infinite desire to get a hold of that dirt and really do not just science, but also characterizing the environment of the moon. So I think that's very exciting. And, you know, who knows, if we get Catherine Bennell-Pegg up flying with ESA, she might even have a shot at a seat to the moon herself.
Pam, just finally, how do you reflect on those Apollo missions doing what they did without the technology that we have at our fingertips now? How do you see what they achieved then?
It's truly remarkable. But it, you know, it's important to understand that it was a camping trip. It was never intended to be a sustained presence. And so, you know, and it was quite risky. I mean, when you look back afterwards, you can actually see the reliability was not everything that we, you know, wished that it would be. There was a single valve that if it failed, the crew would not have been able to get back up off the moon and rejoin to their spacecraft, for example. We would never design anything like that now. So, it's truly extraordinary what was done, especially, you know, with very little computer capability at the time. But I think what we're trying to do, landing on the South Pole and building a permanent presence, is another couple of orders of magnitude harder. But I think we're ready finally to start doing it.
Pam, thank you very much for joining Breakfast this morning. Thank you.
My pleasure.